you're listening to this while playing pitch and putt golf, maybe you have speakers in your golf buggy. Wait a minute, would you use a golf buggy for pitch and putt? Isn't pitch and putt the one where it's just a little miniature course and you bring your kids and they hit the golf ball and it kind of goes towards the hole and you give them a round of applause and a lollipop and you say, oh, that's great, you're a golfer now. You're exactly like your man, what's that fella? Oh, I don't know the names of any golfers. I thought I did. I thought I knew the name of that fella who became very famous about 15 years ago and then had some scandal. What's his name? Oh, Tiger Woods. I know his name. Yes, I do know his name. Obviously, I don't know it well enough to recall it instantly. But I recalled it within 30 seconds of attempting. That's a reasonably good recollection rate, considering I don't follow sports at all. I think it's because there's a documentary about him on one of the streaming services at the moment. I haven't watched it, but there's a documentary about Tiger Woods. I remember when he shot to fame, they said, oh, this fella Tiger Woods, you need to know about this fella Tiger Woods. Doesn't matter whether you're into sport or into golf or into Americans or into spectator events, which also include showbiz news. Some of the coverage of him was more showbiz news than sporting commentary. When he was on the news, they weren't talking about what angle he put his golf clubs at. No. Well, maybe they were talking about what he was doing with his golf clubs during his downtime. Now, of course, in a normal person's life, us mere mortals, your downtime is when you're most likely to be playing golf. Because that's not your job, that's your hobby. Now, I know you're thinking there, golf is not a hobby, and I agree. There are people in this world who enjoy it as a hobby. I'm sure many of them have been told by their doctor, you should go and join a golf club, it'll do you a lot of good. And the reason they tell them that is because the doctor is trying to discreetly tell them that they shouldn't be sitting on their arse watching television all weekend. At the very least, if you go and walk around a golf club, of course they don't walk around the golf club. They get a little jeep thing, a little buggy, and then you employ a 12-year-old golf caddy to drive it. Hopefully you have speakers on your golf buggy. Isn't the caddy the kid that you hire for the 3 hours to carry your clubs around? That's right. And the buggy is the little vehicle that you drive around on. Do you pay the caddy to drive the buggy, or is it he just follow around, walk behind you, gathering up your clubs as you just drop them behind you? I've never been on a proper golf course. These people who go around playing, do they hit the ball and then just toss the club over their shoulder and have the kid collect up the clubs behind them? Like it's just some crumbs they've dropped as they're going along and they just pick them up and put them back in the bag? I don't know. You get this kid and you say, hello, I'm going to need the number 8.5 club for this. Now, there should be one in the bag there. If it's in any sort of order, it'll be between the 7.5 and the 9.5. I say between. It's a bag. It's a round bag. You can't arrange your clubs in a straight row in the bag. No, they're in a bunch. It's a terrible organisational system. How many types of clubs are there anyway? I don't know. As people seem to need bags of clubs. They all look exactly the same to me, I can tell you. Now, maybe there's a slightly different one for the sand dune. Artificial, fake sand dune. It's not real at all. They make these artificial things. They put down some grass and then they leave a bit where there's no grass or else there's grass there and they remove the grass and they replace it with a sand bunker. And say, oh no, there's a sand bunker magically formed here. What are we going to do? We'll have to play around it. How terrible. It was put there for you. It's about as real as going on an air flight simulator. Even an air flight simulator, you're usually playing it on your laptop at home. You're not going to an actual real flight simulator in a pilot school somewhere. No. So it's not even a real simulator. It's a mock-up of a simulator. At the very least, if you're going to do that, if you're going to play flight simulator at home, what you should do is what I used to do with my teddy bears when I was about 7 years of age. We didn't really have computers at that age. I would get a cardboard box and I'd cut windows and doors in it. And that would be a lorry. My teddy bears would run a business out of this lorry. I don't know exactly what they were doing. It's various businesses. I'd get a marker and I'd write the brand names all over the box, and they'd drive that around the sitting room. And that was closer to a proper simulator than any air piloting simulator that you're going to do on your computer. Because in a real simulator, you're in a box. They know they don't build a whole plane in the pilot school, but they build kind of the front of the plane. They don't even put a nose on it, I know, but they build a box. It's akin to, well, actually it's even less realistic than those things they put in supermarket lobbies that you put 10 pence into and your kid drives a train forward a few inches and then back a few inches and then forward a few inches and then back a few inches until the 10 cent runs out. A real flight simulator is even less real looking than that on the outside because it's just a box. They don't make it look like a plane, but on the inside it's quite realistic. You have all your buttons and switches. You have a screen that's made to look like it's the window of a plane. Now, does the screen have real windscreen wipers on it, or are they simulated on the screen, I wonder? Because I was watching Air Crash Investigation last night, and there was one where it was raining, and he noticed that his windscreen wiper wasn't functioning correctly. It was going very slowly, not fast enough to keep the windscreen clear. Apparently the rule for his employer, his airline, was that if a windscreen wiper is malfunctioning, you can't take off or you can't land or whatever. Obviously you have to land eventually, but you land somewhere else where it's not lashing rain, I suppose. I don't know. Maybe he was taking off. If it's malfunctioning, you can't take off. So you hear him saying to the co-pilot, oh, it's working, it's just not working fast enough, something like that. So that was the excuse. The windscreen wiper was working, just wasn't going fast. So he's like, that's not malfunctioning, it's functioning. I don't know. But if you have that on an air flight simulator, I suppose if you had a real windscreen wiper, you'd have to put it on the inside. Because that's not a real window, that's a screen with stuff on it. If you put that on the outside of the screen and they just poured water onto it, you're not going to see that because you're not looking through a window, you're looking at a video screen. And this stuff is going on outside of the video screen. So you'd probably have to put the windscreen wiper on the inside of the flight simulator thing. And maybe have a system that pours drops of water down the inside of that window. That's not a window, it's a screen. Is that right? You'd have to either have simulated windscreen wipers on the computer screen window or real ones. And if you're having real ones, you have to have real water as well, because you can't have it so there's fake water on the TV screen with real wipers. And you can't have it where there's real water but fake wipers, because the two are from two different worlds. It's a little more complicated than you thought. So I have a newfound respect for the people who operate these things now and who learn to fly on those things, and the people who set up these tests. It's a lot more complicated than I thought. Car driving instructors don't have that. They don't get to go, oh, we're going to test you now. I'm going to lean out through the sunroof while you're not looking, and I'm going to pour some water down the front of the car to see if you'll turn on the wipers. They won't say that, of course. They'll just do it. But the person who's being tested in this car driving test, he'll notice the tester opening the sunroof and doing that. Unless he sets it up in advance while you're sitting there in the office waiting to go for your test. The instructor says, oh, hello, I just want to check your car before you come out. I'll check this car and see if it's suitable for the test. And he'll go out on his own and he'll set up a little hose going from the passenger seat from a bottle of water that he hides under the passenger seat. He will start up going out through the sunroof so he can perform a fake rain test to see if he'll use the windscreen wipers properly. Why would you do that, you might ask? Well, because otherwise you can't schedule a test with absolute certainty that it's going to start raining at some point during the test. We don't have that much control over the weather yet. And if we did, I don't think we'd want to control the weather for every driving test that's going on. Everyone in the city has to experience this weather with showers starting every hour of every weekday all year round just so people can do driving tests. No, I think I'm real about this shit. Once upon a time, there was a dog, basically a dog. And this dog, he was walking along the street one day, minding his own business, thinking, "Oh, I smell meat. I smell meat. It smells familiar, this meat. It smells like me. This meat smells like me. Am I me? I think I might be me. I smell very much like me, because when I smell dead animals in the fridge or in the butcher's or on the side of the road, they all smell a bit like this. I must be me. Am I me? Christ, I thought it was a dog, but no, I'm me. Is there any way to find that out without putting myself to harm? I don't know. Without making it weird. Now, certainly, you're probably not supposed to do it in public anyway. It's probably against the law to eat yourself in this society where I, as a dog, who for millions of years roamed the earth pissing everywhere without anyone telling me what to do. I'm expected to abide by this society's rules. So I'm probably not allowed to eat dog or to eat my own self. Is it illegal for dogs to eat themselves? It probably isn't, but it might be illegal for owners to allow dogs to eat themselves. You're supposed to supervise them properly and not let them eat themselves. Is that happy like if your child stabbed itself in the face? The child wouldn't be in trouble for that. The child wouldn't be breaking any laws or anything, but you might be judged for that. You might be considered irresponsible. If you're a young child who was barely old enough to use cutlery and it stabbed itself in the face, you say, why does your child have a knife? You can't just say, oh, it's because that's what he eats with, has his own cutlery. We give it his own cutlery. Don't worry, it's safety cutlery. He can't hurt anyone with it. At least that's what we taught. It takes quite some talent to hurt yourself with safety cutlery. What is safety cutlery? I don't know. In fact, now that I think about it, I've never heard of anything called safety cutlery. But surely there must be training cutlery or safety cutlery that you use on your child when they start eating off a plate. When they stopped eating things with a spoon or being fed milk and all sorts of nonsense and you start feeding them proper meals. Surely they don't go straight onto a normal metal knife and fork. I don't remember as a child. Was I weaned off the spoon? I have pictures of myself eating cornflakes with a spoon from what looks like a plastic bowl and looking very happy about it. I don't have any pictures of myself learning how to use a knife and fork. How would you do that? How could you learn how to use a knife and fork without actually using a knife and fork? You couldn't. So maybe do they have some sort of plastic or paper knives and forks? I suppose a bread knife do you use for eating your dinner with? That's not very dangerous, is it? I mean, a butter knife. Is that what you call it? Obviously, you wouldn't give a child a steak knife or something like that. The knives were not sharp at all. You could barely do anything with them. You were just pushing the stuff onto your fork. Now, the fork was sharp. The fork had four prongs on it. It was like something you'd find in a mythological hell. The fella running hell, you'd see him sometimes in mythology. He'd be going around with this giant fork. It was more akin to a gardening implement than a fork that you eat with. But that's only because of the size. And in all other respects, it was very close to the fork that you give your children to eat with whenever you start giving them proper meals. When do you start giving them a knife and fork to eat with? Are they 7 or 8? I don't know. I do remember when I was at most 6 and a half, because I remember what house we lived in until we were 6 and a half. And I remember being in that house eating potatoes. You must have used a fork surely for that. Or maybe not. Maybe we ate that with a spoon. If we're eating potatoes, I imagine we were given that with meat and veg. So you need a knife and a I don't know, maybe it was caught up for me. If someone cut up my meat, even into edible squares and little pieces so it didn't need any further work done in it, I would still want to eat it with a fork. I wouldn't want a spoon and that. No. I do remember as a child imagining that the inside of my torso was somewhat like a barrel, and that over time, perhaps over the course of several weeks, the inside of your torso fills up with layers of potato and layers of cornflakes until it gets quite full, and at some point, I don't know, it empties or something. I don't think I'd figured out the connection with the toilet in that respect, even though I'm sure I was using the toilet independently at that age. I know, I thought the inside of the torso, that was like a storage tank for food and it fills up. I was a bit like, later in life, I went to school near these two huge old oil or gas tanks that used to serve the city. I think they had closed down by then. But I was told by my father that the way these oil tanks worked was that they sank into the ground and then raised up depending on how full or empty they were. So they're these huge cylindrical things. Each of them was the size of a 6 or 7 story building in this kind of frame. Cyclists have on their bike, they have this cup holder and they have a cup in it, a covered cup. It's got a lid on it. And these tanks, they looked very like that. Somewhere around Lansdowne Road Stadium, which is now named after a phone company or insurance broker. Either they sank into the ground when they were full or they sank into the ground when they were empty. I don't know. My father might have had that wrong. My father was not an oil expert. He was a banker. He wouldn't necessarily know about that stuff. He knew a lot about gardening and he knew a lot about carpentry. He knew a lot about making homebrew beer. He knew a lot about the Irish banking system. He knew a lot about how to buy and sell a house. I remember moving house once. The only formalities involved were a homemade for sale sign, which was stuck to my bedroom window. Now, I was in the box room upstairs at the front. People would pass my house for several weeks and see this huge sign over my bedroom window that said for sale, and there was a phone number. Now, I didn't take that personally because I understood that the house was for sale. I do remember one night I'd gone to bed. I might be misremembering this, but I think my father poked his head in and he introduced this fella who he used to work with in the bank years prior to that in Donegal or somewhere, who were turned up because he was interested in buying a house. He was having a quick look around the house and eventually bought it. I suppose it's reasonable. If you have a big, huge sign and you put it on one particular bedroom, you can't show someone around the house and say, oh, you can't see the bedroom, the one bedroom that's for sale because it's being slept in. No, just as when you buy a car, you want to see the car on the road working. You want to see a bedroom. Ideally, you want to see it being slept in. So you can see, yes, this is a fully functioning bedroom. You can sleep in it. And I did sleep in that bedroom quite a bit. Quite a bit. I think I was very good at sleeping in that bedroom. I slept there until I was, I think, 9 and a half or maybe 9 and a quarter, something like that. Now, where was I going with that? Oh, the dog thing. Oh, yeah. The whole dog thing. That's nonsense. Just a way to get going. And then we moved to this house. Now, I live in this house now. Obviously, this house that I'm in. But this is my second time living in this house. The first time living in this house, I think I just started college, a year or two into college. So I was a very young child, obviously still living with my parent. My early memories of this house were having a very, very, very severe toothache. I was getting used to this long commute. For the first time, I was getting a long-distance coach to Dublin. So I got a Discman, a portable CD player. So you put in your pocket and you connect up to your head using earphones and you press a button and you play something. And I got into a band called Ian Dury and the Blockheads. Now they performed Hit Me With Your Rhythm Stick and There Ain't Half Been Some Clever Bastards and other things like that. I didn't realise at the time that Ian Dury's whole thing was that he didn't have a note in his head, couldn't sing at all. He's very entertaining and profound. didn't look a bit like a rock star because, well, for one thing, as I learned later, due to childhood polio or something, he had a very badly formed one side of his body. His arm was very small, so he looked weird on stage. And that was fine. There's nothing wrong with that. I never even saw videos of him until quite recently. I'd been listening to his music 25 years ago, whenever this was, the 1990s. Never occurred to me listening to his CD, which was very well remastered, had nice clear sound. I'd no idea, even from that, I had no idea that he couldn't sing. As for one thing, I knew very little about singing in those days. I had studied music in school, studied some of the great composers, none of whom could sing. Haydn and Mozart and Bach, there was very little singing going on there. Now Schubert, that was a weird one, because he used to write both symphonies about a trout. Didn't have a word of vocals in them. But then he'd also write, he turned that into a little song called A Trout Too, and he gets some high-pitched opera woman to sing it. So he had a whole orchestral symphony or whatever you call it about the trout, but then he had a little song about the trout too. So I imagine it's like MasterChef, the television program. They make MasterChef in a lot of countries now. They have the main MasterChef program, and that's on in prime time. And then they make a MasterChef Junior for the kiddies. Same with the Great British Bake Off. They do a junior bake off for the kids as well. That's put on the afternoon for the children. And I imagine Schubert was very much like that. He'd write the symphony for the adults, and that was the big whole thing. You went down to the symphony. This was before they used to record music. You went down to listen to the symphony in some sort of musical hall. You go in there, you'd sit down, you'd make yourself comfortable. Or, well, in those days, I get the feeling from period dramas and stuff that in those days, people didn't worry about comfort as much as they worried about looking respectable. So when they were going to these musical performances, they'd sit down in their tops and tails and top hats and shirt and tie and a suit and a blazer and a handkerchief sticking out of the lapel pocket, folded very carefully. Highly immaculately polished shoes. They'd sit down in that and they'd patiently wait for some musicians to come on. The children's version was the trout song. It was just a 3 or 4 verse song about the trout sung by this woman who sounded like an opera singer. And that was probably what kids listened to in those days. In those days, kids listened to whatever you gave them to listen to. They didn't say, oh no, we want pop music. Well, maybe that was considered pop music in those days. It probably was. It's probably the equivalent of reading picture books. You have this music and there's someone singing words in it. That's the equivalent of getting a Shakespeare play and putting a load of cartoons in it instead of words. I don't know. Well, it seems reasonably intelligent to me. Whereas a woman going, something, 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 and something, 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 something. I've forgotten the words of the trout song. It's in my head now, though, the melody. It goes do 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 do. There's piano in it. The piano would be rippling piano, presumably echoing the sound of the waves rippling or something like that. There's a lot of things in those days. They used to do whole pieces of music about the weather. They do a bit now. The pop music, they have songs that have things like the sound of a train in it. You have that fella, the Divine Comedy, he did a pop song. It was meant to be about the British National Health Service, but the music in it has made the sound like a train. It has the rhythm of a train, the rhythm the wheels make. And then if you listen to the song Breakthrough by Queen, now it's not obvious immediately the first time you listen to it that that's meant to sound like a train chunting along the rhythm of a train going along the tracks. And then if you watch the video, they made it a bit more apparent because they filmed the video on the back of a train. And then what else? You do have that song by that woman in the 60s or 70s going on about her husband who works from 9 to 5 and then he gets the morning train, works from 9 to 5 and all this. And in the video, she's on a train, kind of pointing at the train driver. to make it explicit that she's talking about a train is rather obvious. I'm not sure if the music in that sounds like a train. I don't think it does, but you associate it with a train because the lyrics mention train about 100 times. The whole song is about her husband getting the train to work and then working from 9 to 5, which apparently was a big deal in those days, and then coming home on the train. Now, she's in the video, she's on the train, making a nuisance of herself. She goes into the, if I remember rightly, she goes into the locomotive section. That's really not the done thing, unless you're on one of these steam trains that they run as an excursion once a year along the coast here. People buy tickets for a steam train excursion. They get this train out of the museum and they add a load of carriages onto it, and it goes down the coast for an hour or two, and everyone has a grand day out. They probably invite people into the engine section on that. But that's a very different thing from getting onto the train where your husband is commuting to work, very busy morning peak service, and she's going around singing and pointing at the driver and saying, here's a video illustrating my song, which apparently was not explicit enough for you. No, that's a bit silly. I just realised that previous segment where I went on about moving to this house for the first time, I mentioned that I got a severe toothache when we first moved in here, and then I didn't elaborate on that. Well, I presume you know what a toothache is. You don't need me to tell you about that. A toothache is the worst pain you can get. I imagine it's worse than being shot. I imagine it's worse than a massive heart attack where you grab your chest and you go, ow, this hurts, fucking hell. A toothache is much worse than what I imagine that to be like. Definitely much worse than having your brain gouged out, because the insides of your brain doesn't have any pain receptors. You can't feel pain inside your skull. So that's not a problem. But I tell you, you can damn sure to Christ as hell that you can feel pain inside your mouth. Wait a minute though. Your mouth is within the perimeters of your skull, isn't it? So I suppose it's just a brain compartment that doesn't have brain receptors. Your mouth sure as hell does. That's a poor design. They made your whole head so that they can't feel pain inside it in the compartment where the brain is. But in the compartment where the teeth are, the compartment that you open and close every day and shove things into and out of that could cause pain or disease or illness. They think, oh no, we put pain receptors on that, it'll be fine. If there was a mouth on the top of your head that wasn't, not for eating or breathing or anything like that, but just for doing general maintenance on your brain. If there was an opening in your skull, a natural opening, that provided access to the compartment within the skull where the brain is, you could put things in and out of that all day, every day, without feeling any pain whatsoever. And you wouldn't have to worry about it. There'd be no equivalent of toothache or a sore tongue in the brain compartment. No. But in your mouth, which you open and close every day, there's all sorts of ways you shove sharp cutlery into that mouth almost every day. You're putting in things that might carry germs that could cause pain. You're doing all sorts of things. You're breathing in air 24/7 from whatever environment that you're in at that time that you've very little control over. So all sorts of things going into your mouth that can cause pain. So why not have that so that it's like the rest of the skull cavity where there's no pain receptors? Have pain receptors further down. So if the stuff that's causing the pain is a problem, then the alarm can go off after it's gone down the esophagus. Have pain receptors beyond the entry to the throat. Don't have it so it sets off every time there's anything remotely worrying going on inside your mouth. Your mouth is just like the porch of your body. It's the front porch. We have a front porch on our house. When I get deliveries, they can freely open the front porch and put the stuff in the front porch and then close it. It's not like they're coming into the house. No, I've never lived in an apartment building other than a bedsit in a converted house. I've never lived in one of those big apartment blocks that have an entry reception desk or an entry lobby or something like that. I imagine the entrance lobby, it doesn't have people sitting there eating their breakfasts or watching television, or they don't have beds in there or a toilet or other stuff. No, that stuff all goes on upstairs in the apartments, because that's an entrance lobby where you can come in, you leave a parcel or anything like that. So there's no need to have pain receptors in there. Just as if you had an apartment that was alarmed, you wouldn't extend your alarm system so it goes down into reception. So if someone enters reception who's a bit dodgy, the alarm doesn't go off in your apartment. No. So why would you have that in your mouth? Trust your mouth to deal with all these things and not have to set an alarm off in your brain that causes massive agony just because there's something wrong with one of your teeth. No, there's something wrong with one of your teeth. If your teeth does any damage to your food, detect that when it's going down the windpipe or the esophagus, wherever it goes. That's where you put your security. Your brain freaks out and says, oh, there's something wrong with one of these teeth. It's got a chip missing out of it. You better send the alarm. Cause severe pain for the next week until you get that either filled in with some sort of paste that could be anything or else has it chopped out by the dentist. The dentist can put any old crap into that cavity and your brain thinks, oh, that's fine now. I can turn off the pain signal. We're perfectly happy with that. That's the equivalent of someone coming into reception with a shovel full of manure and dumping it on top of the, I don't know what's the equivalent of that. You know, think of some analogy there. As I say, I haven't lived in any of those big apartment blocks that have a lobby. No. Suffice to say, your mouth should not have pain receptors in it. That's overkill. No reason for that. If you don't have pain receptors in your brain, you shouldn't have them in your mouth. Maybe we can start controlling this evolution thing. Tell it to stop with its nonsense. Absolutely none of that shit. We're a conscious, intelligent, self-conscious, advanced civilization now. We need to take control of this evolution and make it go better than that.
Into your head.
It's exam season at the moment. There's kids all over this country doing exams. Or we're about to do exams. I think so, anyway. Wait a minute, is that right? Oh, I think so, yes. We're just entering into the beginning of June. There's kids doing exams everywhere, students everywhere, going into exam halls. I've been in many exam halls. I've been all over the place. I've been in some of the biggest exam halls. I've been to the big ones. I've sat exams in the RDS. At the RDS, it's a place in Dublin where you go to see trade shows and greyhound racing or something goes on as well outside. You go there for trade shows and there's all sorts of big expos and things, but they also have exams there. If you're doing some exam for God knows what institution, sometimes they rent out a big hall there. You go and line up in some godforsaken hellhole thing that's like a warehouse. It's a warehouse where they churn out students. You sit there, you can bring one pencil. No, what was it? Two pencils, a calculator, a ballpoint pen. Do they let you have a bottle of water nowadays? I don't know. I last did an exam in the 1990s, and I don't think you're even allowed to bring a beverage in with you. In those days, it wasn't considered necessary. They said, no, there's oxygen in there. There's plenty of oxygen in there in the exam hall. That's all they need. The air is made up of hydrogen and oxygen. And if they're thirsty, they can break down the air and get water droplets from that and absorb it or lick their own sweat or else work up the courage to put their hand up and say, hello, no, I don't need a toilet break. I need to get a glass of water so that I don't die because I have something wrong with me and we're not all built the same, you moron. And now, of course, he wouldn't say it like that. He'd say, hello, sorry to be a burden. Sorry to be a huge burden on you, Mr. or Mrs. Exam Invigilator. But I have this need to absorb water into my system so that I don't die. Little quirk of my system. It's really like when you have a lawnmower and you don't oil it for 10 years. It becomes a problem. Now, I know this isn't a 10-year-long exam, although it feels like it. Although it doesn't, because I'm fast running out of time. I remember writing in exams. I think about it now, and I can't imagine how I could possibly have written so many words manually with my hand in the space of 3 hours. You can write pages and pages of stuff legibly, and come out and not have your hand fall off. How did we do that? I don't know. Now I can't read my own handwriting anymore, unless I get a Sharpie pen and write it in 4-inch tall letters. So if you're doing it now, surely they don't let you bring in a computer and type it, do they? No. But presume it's still pen and paper. They give you a big sheet of paper and they say, write your answers onto that. And we'll tell you the questions in a minute. In fact, we'll give you the questions typed. You know what's that? They don't handwrite the questions, no. They dictate it to their secretary. They say, oh, question one, what's the square root of 154? Question two, write 20 pages on any of the following three topics. Once upon a time, there was a dog. Two cats walk into a bar. Or the economic situation in Outer Mongolia. Question three. If you think you might be in the wrong exam, please don't write any further because you've already used up a whole page and it's going to waste. The education system of this country does not have an endless supply of stationery. So please put your hand up now and let someone know that you're in the wrong exam. Now what happens then, of course, is that you put your hand up to say you're in the wrong exam. The invigilator comes along and says, oh, what exam are you supposed to be in? And you say, oh, I'm supposed to be in the English language exam. I think it's two doors down. And they'll say, oh, I'm not the invigilator for that. You'll have to wait till someone from that exam notices your hand, which they're not likely to do because they're in another hall down the other end of the building. So you're going to have to hope that they somehow happen to see across the courtyard and in through a window and see that someone has their hand up here. Who looks like they're in the wrong exam. And that's what are the chances of that? No. And then you will say, well, can we phone them or something? Send them a text message? And they'll say, certainly not. There's no phones allowed in here. In fact, no communication of any kind. No communication of any kind. Close your mouth and stop speaking to me. I'll close my mouth and stop giving you stuff to listen to from me. That'll help. But don't write anything further either, because it's going to waste paper. There'll be no wastage in this house. And then, of course, you say, it's not a house. And they'll say, yes, I know. This is the Ordiesto. Last time I was in here was on a Sunday afternoon at the Ideal Homes exhibition. So they used to build a mock-up of a house in the middle of the exhibition hall. They built a mock-up of a house. People would queue up to have a tour of it. They used to set up ropes leading you to walk around this house. And you go around through every room in this house. So you're an invigilator in the exam hall, which was a week ago used for the Ideal Homes exhibition. It's probably very confused. They're looking around saying, oh, yes, that's where that house was. It seems to be gone now. It looked like a brand new house last week. Did they just take it down? Maybe they shipped it off to Ethiopia and gave it to the poor kids there or something. I hope so. I hope they didn't put it to waste. Because this is one thing I can't abide, it's waste. Absolutely no waste. I won't have waste going on in my exam hall. And I know the Ideal Homes exhibition was not in my exam hall, but it was in the same venue. They've vacated it now and we're renting it as the exam hall. Oh, I suppose it doesn't really matter. Why do I care about this? I'm an exam invigilator. No, they were right. I shouldn't care about this at all. I shouldn't care about this at all. And at this point, the exam invigilator is standing there. She's kind of backed away from you. She's finished dealing with you, but she's still muttering to herself. And people are looking and wondering. And she's looking back and thinking, excuse me, what are you looking at? And they'll say, I don't know, but it's looking back. And she'll say, excuse me, what did you say? And they'll say, I think I said, I don't know, but it's looking back. Well, I probably shouldn't have said that, should I? No, so let's say I didn't say that. And the invigilator will say, oh, that's a good idea. You didn't say that. And then they'll say, what did I not say? And the invigilator will say, you didn't say, I don't know, but it's looking back. And they'll say, oh, so you did hear me the first time. So when you asked me, what did you say? You were trying to lead me into saying it a second time, even though you'd already heard me. That's coercion. You should be ashamed of yourself, madam. That moment, the invigilator will realize something. She realized, oh, I'm not cut out for this job. Well, that's okay, because the job only goes on for another 2 weeks and then we're done for the year. It's not like there's exams going on all year round. No, no. So if I'm not suitable for it, that's fine. I'll be gone by next week. And all these kids will be gone off on whatever they do in the summer, working some Christmas tree factory or go to America or go and do drugs for the rest of the summer. I don't know. I wonder what they do for the rest of the summer. Do they do drugs? Maybe they do. As long as they're not doing it in my exam hall, I suppose. Or in the toilets just outside. I don't know if you've ever been one of those people who puts up their hands in an exam hall and asks to go to the toilet. I've done it once in my whole life. And that was in the RDS, the same place where they have those exhibitions and things. I went to the toilet and then I was very confused because guarding the toilet at a desk outside was this kid who I used to go to school with. He had nothing to do with the college I was going to. For some reason, he had a job guarding the toilets and he greeted me, had a nice little hello and stuff. What are you up to? Oh, just doing the Institute of Accounting Technicians in Ireland first year exams. What are you doing? Oh, I'm guarding the toilets for those exams. Oh, that's great. Now, I wonder, it was a long time ago. I wonder, was I going into the toilets to try to cheat? I can't imagine myself cheating. But I also can't imagine myself asking to go to the toilet in the middle of an exam. It's not something I do. I would make sure I am well emptied before I go in, especially in a huge hall like that. I wouldn't want that much attention on me. You put your hand up, and then you have to find your way back to your seat then as well. This huge place. No, I can't imagine I would do that for any reason other than cheating. But I also can't imagine myself cheating in an exam. I can only assume I've changed and that I used to be like that at some point. I don't know. I don't know. Do you know? You probably don't. You're probably making assumptions about me now, though, which is absolutely dreadful. I suppose I brought that on myself. You probably think less of me now because I've told you that I wouldn't put my hand up and ask to go to the toilet in the middle of an exam. Well, you shouldn't think less of me because of that. It means I have some self-control. It means I was somewhat mildly OCD, so I took care of all of that before I went into the exam. I made sure as well urinated. I also made sure not to drink too much liquid, which also, I suppose, put me at risk of needing to put my hand up and ask if I can have some water. And I wouldn't do that either. I think I'd be even less likely to do that than to ask to go to the lavatory. But still, I don't know. It's a bit weird that they put someone from my old school on guard on the toilets. That one day, that one time I ever asked to go to the bathroom during an exam. That's a bit weird, isn't it? I suppose not that weird since the school was just a few minutes walk from the RDS. And he probably lived locally, so there is that. Maybe they should have left that house from the Ideal Home exhibitions. They should have left that in the hall. The house could have been used for both a bathroom and a kitchen to get a drink of water. But it'd be more dignified, the fellow who guards the toilets. Instead of sitting outside the toilets, he could sit in the dining room or sitting room at a table there. Be more dignified, wouldn't it? I looked at a show house once and the estate agent was sitting at the dining room. Now that I think about it, he was sitting in the dining room in that show house. He wouldn't have known that there were people upstairs pissing into the ensuite toilet that wasn't plumbed in yet. So there was not much guarding going on down there. And he wasn't trying to guard an exam either. So I suppose it's not really the same. They're better off sending that house off, dismantling it and selling it to the poor kids in Ethiopia. Now, this was the early 90s, the original 1980s famine in Ethiopia had either ended or been forgotten about. But I think there was other stuff going on in Africa then. I'm sure there were famines and wars and things. Wasn't there that thing in Rwanda? Wasn't there a big horrible thing going on in Rwanda? Would leftover house from the Ideal Homes exhibition in Dublin have helped with that? I don't know, is the answer to that. I don't know. Anyway, as I say, if you're listening to this while playing pitch and putt golf, I suppose you could be doing that on a simulator too, couldn't you? I suppose you could. In fact, that's more likely. Because what are the chances you're going to be listening to this while you're golfing? You're not. Let's be honest. You're not. You're not. Even if you are, if you have your horn and the speakers in the buggy, I'm not going to have your full and undivided attention. So you're not really listening. You're playing the show on those speakers, but you're not paying attention. And I'm not ungrateful that you're playing this podcast in public. You're prepared to put your reputation at stake, what's left of it after you're seen playing pitch and putt with a vehicle driving around the course. But still, and to be fair, maybe you're disabled. Maybe it's not really a golf buggy. It's one of those electric wheelchairs and you needed to get around the pitch and putt club, in which case I apologise. I take that back. I wasn't thinking. You're more likely to be playing pitch and putt on a simulator, perhaps on your computer. Now, why would you play pitch and putt as a computer game? Is your computer so limited that it can't do a proper full simulated golf game on a proper golf course simulated? I don't know. Is that how it works? Because I can't imagine. When you're on a little computer playing Pac-Man, it doesn't say, oh, this is only a small computer. We're only going to have two of the little yellow things going around. Wait, what's in Pac-Man? Pac-Man is the little yellow thing. So what? We're only going to have three of the little, whatever the scary things going around that you're supposed to either eat or get eaten by. I can't even remember the exact details of Pac-Man now. It's been so long. But let's say in Pac-Man that there were, let's say there were little blue ghosts that you're supposed to go around and eat up because that somehow gets rid of them. That's probably wrong. I'm probably misremembering that, but it's just an example. It's just to illustrate. Let's say there's four blue ghosts in Pac-Man that you're supposed to eat up. If you're on a smaller computer, does it say, oh, you can only have two ghosts on this. We can't simulate a full Pac-Man game on this. I very much doubt it. So why would you be playing a computerized game of pitch and putt golf instead of full-blown golf on a full-blown golf course simulated? That's mostly just green stuff anyway. Even those racing car games they had in arcade games in the 1980s, they were able to simulate loads of green stuff. You'd be in this racing car going along this ridiculously simple racing track. Just be a little grey road. Everything else, the ground would be green all around it. You have a green landscape. That wasn't limited. It was very easy to simulate lots of green landscape because it was just putting the colour in. It wasn't very sophisticated at all. So I can't imagine it's that much more difficult to simulate a whole golf course, which is mostly green, than it is to simulate a pitch and putt course. Maybe there's a difference in the challenges involved and people actually like what's involved in the pitch and putt game. It's played differently. I know very little about golf or pitch and putt. They're very good at mowing the lawn, I'll grant you that. They don't get enough praise for that. There's a lot to criticise about them, but they keep their front lawn immaculate. These golf clubs. At least it looks it to me from a distance. Just short green grass, perfectly green. It's not covered in weeds. Or is, I don't know, is it covered in weeds? As I say, I don't look close enough. I don't think they're covered in weeds, are they? Can you play golf on grass that's covered in weeds? Wouldn't that make it bumpy and stuff that would cause uncontrolled obstacles and make it unfair? I don't know. Do they have daisies on golf clubs? Surely they're just soft. They don't affect the ball much. You can just let the daisies grow. Can you? Maybe you can't. Do they have daisies still? Do the kids still know about daisies? I remember being in play school. I was in play school. I remember them bringing all those very young children up into the field behind the play school. In fact, now I think about it, it might have been that same field that was behind the school that I went to a year or two after last year had the quicksand. Or it might not. You feel like it was in the same location, but it was a lot more pleasant, I can tell you. While I was in play school, maybe I just wasn't aware of a lot of the real world yet. It seemed a lot more pleasant. We went up and we sat around and one of the teachers was making a daisy chain. I don't know if she was instructing us all in the manufacture of daisy chains or she was just doing it out of boredom, but she was making a daisy chain. I think I must have grabbed it and broken it somehow. Not with any bad intentions or anything, but I think I might have broken it. and she wasn't impressed. Wasn't trying to impress, in fairness. It was a 4-year-old child. It's not my job to go around impressing adults. My parents are paying you to preschool me. They're not paying me to impress you. And I'm not trying to apply for a job in your play school. I'm not trying to impress you. It's not an episode of MasterChef or some gardening competition. It's not some flower show where I'm an entrant and I'm trying to show off my flowers or something. No. You're an adult making a daisy chain, sitting in the field with a load of preschool children. And I'm a child and I broke your chain. I'm pretty sure I did that accidentally. In excitement, I was responding to something she was saying. I broke the daisy chain. I don't think there were any repercussions. I don't think I got in trouble at all. I think I just became a disappointment. And that's a very young age at which to become a disappointment. It must have been 4 or 4.5. I've spoken quite recently about that field behind the school. When I did go to school eventually, it was in the same venue. And the field behind that school had a corner that we were told to avoid. It was suggested to us that it was a swamp or something. And it was like quicksand. You don't go into that corner or you'll just sink into the ground and you'll never be seen again. In fact, you wouldn't want to be seen because the state you're in when you come back up out of that. I think that's why a lot of us hate the first season of Star Trek, The Next Generation. Because there's that awful, terrible episode, the one where they kill off your one, the security officer. They go to a planet and there's a talking oil slick who keeps swallowing them up and spitting them out. And then eventually it swallows her up and she's spat out and she's dead. And that's the end of her. And then we get Worf instead. Worf takes over her job and that's the end of it. And she left that program because for some reason she didn't feel she was getting serious storylines for her character. I know I'm always going on about these quicksand and swamps, but it was a big deal in those days. It was a big deal. A very big deal. When was that Star Trek thing on? I think it was the late 1980s. So that would have been only a few years after my experience in that school with the swamp. That school is still there, so that swamp might well still be there. Or it was never there at all, but it's still there in the folklore and they still use it as a threat against the children. Same place that had the outdoor toilets, incidentally. You go across the yard and then you go over to just beside that field, just beside the entrance of that field, there was an outhouse and that was the toilets. We definitely used the outhouse toilets during lunchtime when we were outdoors and it was fucking freezing. Absolutely freeze your arse off. So you didn't really want to expose your arse then there. Probably intentional. Don't really want to encourage exposing your arse in lunchtime play area or in the buildings around it, in the outbuildings. Now that I think about it, the swamp would have probably been just behind those toilets. So I wonder, was that part of the sewage system? It probably was. That would make sense. There was a little village down the country. It's entirely possible they didn't have a properly, fully functioning sewage system to every part of the town. There was an old school set up by the nuns. That could have been there long before there was even ever a town there. Maybe that's why that town started. They started a settlement. They discovered, oh, there's a river there. That's handy. Because most settlements, they'll look for a river. That's how most cities get started. There was a reasonably big river there. But there was also that swamp. So they thought, oh, look, there's a swamp. We could use that as an effluent, what do you call it, a sewage system. We'll put our primary school up there, the place where we send our youngest kids. We'll build that up there. Then we'll build our schools for other kids. We'll put them elsewhere. And that'll be great. That's how towns used to be settled. Every city you go to in every country, especially the bigger ones, they're all on some river. You find a river, and often it's a river quite near the sea, because all rivers flow to the sea eventually, but they're built near the mouth of the river. If we ever get tired of just living on the river, we have the sea out there as well. We can expand along the coastline. Now, we can't drink out of the sea, but we can drink out of the river. If anyone wants any drinking water, make sure you drink it out of the river. And I know you're thinking, oh, that water in the sea is all coming from the river, so we can just drink it out of the estuary. Well, apparently, no, it doesn't work like that. Because it mixes with the salt water. So every cup of water you're taking out of the estuary, there's a 50% chance that it could be salt water. You really don't want to take that chance. Is that nonsense? I think it is. I think it is. Is it good enough nonsense for this program? That's the problem. It remains to be seen.
Are you going into your head?
Abraham Maslow. Now, he's one of the few philosophers or economists that school children get told of. When you do an introduction to economics in school, you get this thing called the hierarchy of needs. And it's like a food pyramid, except it's for your needs. At the bottom, you have air and oxygen. You have your bottom level satisfied first, then you have your need for stuff that's further up, and then you have luxury items at the top. Some people would probably put cats in among the luxury items. I would not. The whole point of it is that you satisfy your basic needs first, which is air and oxygen and food, which I suppose is reasonable. And then you move on to luxury stuff. But I wouldn't have cats up as an extreme luxury at the very top. No more than you would have your children up as an extreme luxury at the very top, where you say, oh no, these are only for, you want to go nuts and buy a child. But you get the person who has everything, you get them a child. Is that how you got your children? You think, oh, I have a luxury car, I have a mansion, I have everything I need except a child. So I go to do that. I know it's a luxury, but I'm going to go and get a child now or produce one. No, you wouldn't think of your children like that. And I wouldn't think of our cats like that. So don't give me that shit. That shit. Does that even make sense? It probably doesn't. That's good. If you want something to make sense, go and listen to some other shit. Listen to one of those other podcasts that make you so happy with their sense and their information and their knowledge and their proper opinions about things and their accuracy and their research. You go off and do that. Meanwhile, I'll be here. I'll be one of the few podcasts here that just sits here and says whatever comes into my brain after cramming it full of very dangerous, very dangerous beverages that are full of taurine and caffeine. Each to their own, I suppose. Each to their own. I think we're approaching the end of the program. I think we're going to run out of steam any moment now. I can't keep saying anyway, I think we're approaching the end of the program. That's like if you're driving the car and you think, oh, I'm nearly home. I'm about 100 meters from my home. I'll start putting on the handbrake now. I'll put it on a bit every few seconds. Is that how a handbrake works? I don't think it is. If you're living on a very steep hill and you're climbing to the top of the hill, I presume you have an inclination to do that. Especially if you have a small car that's not very powerful, you're going up the hill and you think, oh, I want to bank my progress every couple of minutes. I've got a quarter of the way up this very steep hill. I want to make sure I don't slip back. I want to bank my progress. So I'll hit the handbrake a little bit every couple of minutes. It's a bit like on that game show, The Weakest Link. There's this show, The Weakest Link, and part of it involves the contestants every now and then shouting bank, so they hold on to their, they save their progress so they don't lose whatever points or money they've built up, whatever it is. So I imagine it's something like that when you're driving. Now, I've never driven a car in my life. I don't know what. Do you even have handbrakes in America? You probably don't, because you have automatic. Your cars are automatic. You just sit there. You had automatic cars before they even had self-driving cars. You just sit there, all you have to do is steer and press a pedal. You have 14-year-old children, they're driving to school. You buy them a car when they reach their 12th birthday. And then you give them a sitcom. And it's all, every fucking sitcom now, we have some American child driving a car. And it's all just perfectly normal. Oh yes, my child drives to school. It's perfectly normal. And then they drive out on the, oh, they drive to the, whatever they call that thing they go to. What's that thing you have in every childhood situation, comedy or drama? They go to this end of school dance thing. She'll go, the prom. You all go to your prom. And you say, oh, I'm going to go to my prom. Who will I bring to my prom? Will I drive myself or will I get a taxi because I might get drunk? And then, no, you won't get drunk, of course, because children in America don't drink. Because drinking is shocking. Driving a car at 12 isn't shocking, but having a pint of beer at your, what you call it, whatever you call your end of school thing, at your prom, having a pint of beer at your prom is shocking. You get home and your parents say, were you drinking alcohol? Oh my God, you were drinking alcohol at your prom. And you can't just say, it's okay, I was below the driving limit. I measured my alcohol, I brought a blood measurements thing. I was very careful to measure my blood alcohol level. I made sure not to break the law. I was very careful. I managed it very carefully. I took 3 sips per hour. I got to half a bottle, and it's one of those American bottles of beer. You Americans have these bottles of beer. You say, you call it having a beer. That's not a beer. That's a bottle that's like the size of a sample. Your beer bottles are the size of something you'd find in, you'd find in a mini bar when you look for a whiskey, except you have that. That's your beer bottle size. And you call that having a beer. No, that's having a sixth of a beer. That's not a beer. You say, you talk about having a six pack as well. That's what you do. I see that as well. You say, oh, I'm going to grab a six pack. You'd be shocked. Oh, that fella's drinking. He's having a six pack. No, it's 6 tiny egg cups. If you joined them together, it would fill about half of a pint glass in a normal country. Relax. Take a chill pill, relax. Now, you certainly shouldn't be driving if you're drinking that six pack. But it's not a six pack in any normal sense of the word. So don't kid yourself. Yeah, if you're one of those people who does drink six packs in America, you probably don't realize you've never really drunk, or you've probably never even been intoxicated. The amount you're drinking. You think you're probably shocked at yourself. You think, oh my God, I've got a drinking habit. I drink 6 egg cups of beer every 5 months. I think I'm going to have to go to AAA. Is that what's called over there? AAA. Oh wait, is that the automobile? You have a, just like over here, you have Alcoholics Anonymous and you have an automobile association. I think your automobile association has 3 A's rather than 2, doesn't it? Ours has 2 A's. Your automobile association is Automobile Association of America. So does your Alcoholics Anonymous thing, does that have just 2 A's, or does that have America added onto it as well? Because that wouldn't make it handy. That would make it no less complicated than over here. You'd have 2 different AAs. One is for your car breakdown and one is for your drinking problem. So you have, they'd both be called AAA. I don't know. Because they're both called AA over here. Over there, if they're both called AAA, then that's defeating the purpose. You might as well. Because you do like to add American onto everything. Every TV program you have, oh, American. American Hustle, American Gladiator, American Horror, American. So you don't have to say American in front of everything. It's usually pretty obvious to all of us. So you can just call it Hustle. Just call it, I'll just call it whatever it is. You don't have to. It's usually pretty obvious to most of us, the rest of the world, that it's American. We recognize the accents. We recognize the way you talk very fast, and we have to put on the subtitles, especially if it's a procedural drama. You talk very fast. You could, if you want to, television is dying out. If you want to cut costs a bit and make television survive for another few years, you could do well to just slow down your medical and legal dramas a bit so they don't talk so fast. And you'd get no complaints from the rest of the world, I can tell you. I'd be quite happy if everybody on the likes of ER and Law and Order and Criminal Minds would talk a little bit slower. It wouldn't bother me at all. I wouldn't feel I was being cheated out of any content. No. be great, in fact. So do that, and then and then when you come back here next time, I'll have some more recommendations about how to live your life. So goodbye.